Boot. Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. FBTGyms.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in the ground. Fill your body up in. Walk it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down. Go down. Go down. Come up.
Episode 214.
Yeah.
Of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud.
Just before we get started, a quick shout out to our sponsor, FBT. When we started this podcast, I think we thought it would only be people from the inner city who'd listen.
I know, and now we have listeners all over the place, even as far as Talla.
Sorry to hear.
So this is a message to everyone in Talla. FBT Gym have opened up their new state-of-the-art location now, offering not only top-of-the-line equipment, but also resources, classes and events that will help you build connection among members and an overall support to the fitness community.
And if you're lucky enough not to live in Talla, why not join one of their other locations in Swords, Coolock or Drogheda?
Do these locations have the classes and supportive community as well?
Of course. That's what FBT Gyms are all about. They also offer personal training, heated chamber classes and a Hyrox affiliated.
Unleash your potential at FBT Gym for only €44 a month with no contract, full class access and locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda and now Talla.
Sign up at fbtgyms.ie today.
It's me, COB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by
Mike Perez.
Mike, you are a Cuban cruiserweight boxer.
Yes.
Currently residing in Roddy Collins' house.
Yes. my adopted family.
Yeah.
How are you keeping? Are you training?
Yeah, always.
You have a big fight coming up soon.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah.
When is your next fight?
Next fight is looking for June 7th.
June 7th. That's over in England.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Calvin, we were just chatting off earlier. Right, you were actually in Cuba before and I forgot about that completely.
Yeah, so I went to Cuba. I've always wanted to go to Cuba. I was always fascinated with Cuba and how it's kind of like stuck in the 60s, even in this day and age. So in 2022, myself and my girlfriend went to Cuba and we loved it. Absolutely.
Oh, recently?
Yeah. Beautiful country. Absolutely beautiful. And when we got there, it was the night time. So we had arranged to be picked up and we couldn't find the driver and we were panicking. And then we found the driver and he was bringing us down like all these side streets and it looked real scary and we were like, oh fuck, like this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Couldn't have met friendlier, nicer people. Everybody was so respectful, so humble, so kind. They just wanted to help people.
Yeah, Cuban people are like that, yeah.
It's like that over there?
Yeah. But when they get out of Cuba, they become a different person, you know? I don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy because there's so much poverty in Cuba. And we were worried that, like, maybe you could be mugged or robbed or whatever.
You could be, yeah. You could be. Like, things are really, really dangerous up there right now, you know? Like, you can't actually wear... there are people being killed by taking out their cell phone, you know?
Really, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't see anything like that. Yeah. Everything was really, really nice, really respectful. And when they found out I was from Ireland, we had good conversations about that. We done a tour of Havana, seeing all of Havana.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
Yeah, we went Havana, Vinales, and Cienfuegos.
Yeah, I have a good friend of mine, they live here. He's from Vinales.
Yeah. Vinales, yeah.
He's trying to get me back to Cuba, but like,
nah, fuck that. Yeah. We went to the tobacco farms in Vinales and we made cigars and we bought some cigars.
Yeah.
So we brought some cigars back. So I have some in the at home. I should have brought you one.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I smoked some now,
yeah.
I have long time not smoked, but I smoked some of those Cohiba, like Habanos and stuff.
Yeah.
Nice stuff.
The ones that I got, we got from the farmer. They said they're better than the factory ones.
Oh, yeah.
Because the factory ones are sprayed with chemicals. Yeah. The ones from the farm are fresh. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Where are you from in Cuba?
I born in a place called Ciego de Ávila.
Okay.
I grew up in Santo Espíritu. It's those two places are like in the center of Cuba.
Right.
So like I grew up there. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mike, what we do on this podcast is we like to get our guests to bring us back to the start of their life, where they're from, and what life was like for them to grow up. As you're from Cuba, I think this will be fascinating for everybody because not a lot of people are aware of the situation in Cuba and how difficult it is, and the fact that you're just sitting here, how difficult that was for you.
I mean, like when I get out of Cuba, like things was like way. Things in Cuba are like bad things, like the cities or.
Yeah.
But like it was better than what it is right now. I haven't been in Cuba in 21 years, I think.
Right.
So like, you know, things in Cuba are, because I see the news and stuff.
Yeah.
Things is very, very rough up there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I got out of Cuba, things was okay. You know, like, you know, at least people have food and you know, like they have like place to live or, you know, like some money or whatever. Like right now they, you know, they don't even have electricity there.
Yeah.
So it's getting worse.
Yeah. When so it's like they have like 2 days a week only electricity, you know.
Fuck.
Jesus.
So it's you know, like you can't find food, and if you find any food, you have to cook it or you, because like it's go off, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
It's no electricity or nothing there. So
when we were there, you know, there was shops like stores, and they recommended that tourists don't go because you are gonna then take food away from the people that live there.
Yeah, but like for a tourist, it's good. You know, a tourist have everything there.
Yeah.
You know, but like for the Cuban people, they're the one that's struggling a lot. So.
Yeah.
Take us back to when you were young, Mike. What was life like for you?
When I was young, oh man, I have kind of rough life.
Mm.
My mom and my dad, they're alive, but I don't really have like no connection with them. When I was 5 years old, I have a sister. She's behind me, a year younger than me. At the time, I was 5 years old, and my mom have another husband, you know. So my sister keep like peeing in bed, and every morning the guy used to hit her for peeing in bed. And one day I switched side with her, so he didn't hit me. I was like, oh, also no, you peeing now? Since when? So the next day, I keep doing that for like 2-3 days, right? So at the third, fourth day, the guy hit me too. So I went to the kitchen and I get a pot of hot water and throw it in his face. And I just run to my uncle's house. And I just told him what happened. My uncle come back and beat the guy up.
Mm.
And since that day, my mom kicked me out of the house. So.
And how old were you then?
I was five. I was Jesus. 5 years old, yeah. So I was like, you know, like walking in the street like for like a couple of weeks until like one of my uncles, like somebody told me, one of my uncles, and they called my dad, but my dad lived in a place that I just told you, San Espiritu. So he went and picked me up, and that was the worst thing ever happened to me. My dad is an alcoholic, and he used to beat me up every single day for no reason, like... Or for a reason, like even I go back to school and he been drinking, I'd be like, come on, just, you know, drink this. And I'd be like, no, I don't want to, you know? And he beat me up. You know, like, you gotta be a man, you don't have to drink this and stuff like that. So one day I come back from the school and he wasn't there. I don't know where he was, nobody know where he was. And you know, since there, like, they bring me to the orphanage and I just grew up there. When I get to the orphanage, like, I start getting beat up about the older kids and stuff like that. And one day I was like, nah, man, I am too good for this, I can't do this. And from there, like, I went up to, like, minor prison and stuff like that, so.
Mike, did you ever find out where your dad went?
Sorry?
Where did your dad go?
He went with a woman.
Right.
He went with a woman.
And just left you?
Yeah, he went with a woman, yeah. My mom, I never heard from her until I was like, I think 17 or something like that, 15 or 17, that she saw me on television. And that was when she just contacted me again, because she was looking for the money though. So that was the, yeah.
And what about your sister?
She stayed with my mom. Yeah, she stayed with my mom.
Did you have contact with her?
I don't talk to none of now. I have another sister and a brother with another mom. But with my mom have 2 more kids.
Yeah.
But I don't talk to none of them now.
And see, in the orphanage, you were getting bullied.
Yeah. Yeah. The beginning, yes. At the beginning, yes. But then I was like, nah, I can't do this no more. So after I stopped the guy, from there, the people started like being scared of me. So that was when I started boxing and stuff like that.
Yeah. And what age are you at this time?
5.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what age did you start boxing at?
5.
Oh, as well?
Yeah, I started boxing while 5, yeah.
Right. And then what, did you go to boxing because people were trying to bully you?
No. You know what? I went to boxing because like, I didn't like the school. I didn't want to go to school. So in Cuba, like, you know, during the school and the teachers like going around like, or the coaches going around asking like, do you like to practice like baseball or boxing or judo or, you know, wrestling or, you know, this kind of stuff. So I started in wrestling because like, you know, in wrestling, like, it's like too much like people like on top of people and this like that. And I was like, wait, I don't like this. And then I changed to judo for the kimono keep like sliding off the belt. And I didn't like it. So the guy come and asked like, do you want to do boxing? And I was, did I have to go to school? And he was like, no, man, you don't have to go to school, just training. And I was like, okay, let's go. So I started boxing then. I remember, I never forget, they went to the orphanage, picked me up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And by 8, the coach was like, let's go, everybody. You have to have a child when you go to school. And I was like, yo, but you told me that it's not school. And I was like, come on, Mike. Everybody had to go to school. So, like, since then, it was too late for me, so I had to go to school. And so I started boxing there. And I think when I was 6, I went to my first national competition. I won it. And from there on, like, I started winning, like, Cuban national championships and stuff like that. So.
What? So Cuba is famous for its amateur in boxing, wrestling, all of the combats. What does Cuba do differently to everyone else, Mike? Why is Cuba so successful?
I think that, you know, the... how can I say this? The poverty, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, everybody just trying to be somebody.
Yeah.
Just to get out of Cuba. To compete, you know, like that's the only way we can, you know, like afford a pair of shoes or nice clothes or something like that, you know. So in Cuba, the sport is, you know, like it's very strict. It's like if you miss like three days in a row, you're not allowed to go to gym no more.
Really?
Like they don't take you no more. So like people actually dedicate themselves to it, like and the trainers actually don't play, you know, like they be like there all the time. So that's what I believe, that's what they make us, like they showing us since a small age, like to be disciplined, to be just in there, you know, like here, you know, like in these places, like you have everything, you know, a kid born with everything. We don't know what is a cell phone, well, maybe now, but at the time, like we don't even know what is a, like we don't even know what the internet was, you know what I mean? So, you know, we're not born with like, you know, PlayStation or Nintendo or none of that stuff. Like we only have five channels in the television, you know? So for us it's like was like, okay, or be a baseball player or, you know, any kind of sport that you like, and that's it.
Yeah, Cubans are very good at baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's boxing and baseball is what they're brilliant at. And
yeah,
only recently they've made it so the baseball players can go and play professionally. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they actually did a show on Saturday, the first professional boxing show in Cuba since, I don't know.
Before the 60s,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just so people, so in Cuba, they're a communist regime.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people are aware. And in the 60s, Cuba and America had a lot of tension. And America placed an embargo on Cuba, so they don't trade with Cuba.
That's what they say, man. You know.
Yeah.
That's what the Cuban people or the Cuban government say. But like, that's a lie. This stuff like that, they make us believe that.
You think that's propaganda from the government?
Of course, like, you know, like it's the embargo is not there. You know, like if you see the pages in Cuba, the amount of like import cars that are in Cuba.
Yeah.
If it's an embargo there, why are they getting those cars there? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So when we were on the tour of Havana, Mercedes drove past.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, who owns that? And he says, probably a professional baseball player?
Yeah, I can show you a page that they have like every type of car in Cuba.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like BMWs, X6, so everything, anything, you know, even G-Wagons, everything.
Yeah.
So what is the embargo then?
Yeah.
Like this is the thought that they just...
Corruption.
Yeah. You want to put there, you know?
Yeah. But so what they say is there's an embargo with the US so they don't trade, and then this stops other countries from trading with Cuba because they don't want to piss off the US. This is what they say.
That's what they say, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not true.
Yeah. So Mike, you win your first national championship at 6.
At 6, yes. I think it was 6, yeah. 6 or 7, yeah.
Yeah. And then are you still in the orphanage or what?
No, I was still there. I was there until I was 14, yeah. Then I started living with 13 or 14, yeah. And I started living with my first girlfriend, yeah. Like, she bring me to her house, yeah.
Yeah. And did you love boxing when you first started?
Nah.
No?
Nah.
You just went to get away from school initially?
Yeah.
And when did you start?
You know, like, I still don't love boxing, you know? Nah, I don't like to watch boxing. I love to box myself.
Yeah.
But I don't like to watch it. I don't know why.
You've no interest?
No.
No.
No, I don't.
You don't care? No. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's just a job.
Yeah, to me, I love to box.
Yeah.
You know, like, I love to box. I wish I could box until the day I die, you know? But I don't like to watch it.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in watching boxing, you know? Like, even if you guys say, like, okay, we can go watch some boxing, I can be like, yeah, okay, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever.
But if you tell me, like, hey, we can go and see a game of baseball or something, I'd be like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
or basketball or something like that. But boxing, I don't really interest in boxing, you know?
Yeah. So when you're boxing when you're a kid, do you have any inspirations? Are you aware of, like, other boxers in the world? Or what way is it in Cuba back then?
In Cuba, you can't have, you know, at the time, you do not have no internet or nothing. So, like, you don't know much about, like, professional boxing.
Yeah.
Like that. But, I had never have any kind of stuff like that.
Mm.
You know, like, I always been, like, you know, trying to be the best I could be.
Mm.
I used to look up to Mario Kindelang. He's so poor like me. You know the guy that beat American in the Olympics?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's so poor like me. It's, like, crazy. Mm. His movement, like, his defense and everything is crazy. So I watch him. I watch him a lot, yeah. So
he won gold in 2004?
Yeah. I think he won, like, 2 or 3 golds in the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is what I mean. Like, they just win gold every time.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely more to it. There's something going on.
It was like, it's the training, you know, like, in Cuba have, like, Cuba have the biggest competition in amateur boxing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, to be a Cuban national champion, you have to have at least 5 fights. And it's like, you have to beat everybody in Cuba. And the worst fighter in Cuba is like, he's the best fighter in Cuba. You understand what I say?
Yeah.
Like the worst fighter that you can find in Cuba is really good.
Mm.
If it makes sense what I say, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Like now, you've fought on some big cards. You have some big fight nights coming up ahead of you. But back then, so you've made some money from boxing now. But when you were young, did you ever think that you could make money from boxing?
No.
No?
No. I had never, because like as a Cuban amateur boxer, we get out of Cuba and we win all those competitions, but the money they don't give it to us.
Yeah.
The money they keep it to the government, you know?
Yeah. So they don't even look after the decorated champions?
No.
So you could win like a world championship in amateur,
yeah,
and then you're back training in the gym.
I don't know now, but at the time,
At
the time when I was in Cuba, like we don't get nothing. We just get a wages. If you are good enough, like for example, it's a province, right?
Yeah.
So like, you go to the national competition in Cuba. If you win like gold or silver, then you go to the Havana.
Yeah.
It's a place called La Finca. It's like, so it's a concentration camp.
Like a school of excellence.
So everybody be there, you know, like number one and number two in every division are there. So from there, like, you know, we're fighting every week, every weekend or whatever. It's like whatever win, and that's the person that can get out of Cuba to represent Cuba in any competition that is there. So when you get out of Cuba, they can give you, for example, like 100 euro. And with 100 euro, you have to find a place just to buy like a couple of t-shirts, you know, a pair of shoes or whatever. And that's it. But you win the competition, and they don't give you that price, you know?
Mm.
Like when they land you the check, when you come back to the dressing room, you have to give it to the trainer, and that's it. Yeah.
It's wrong, though. That's
but now I don't know. Like now I like I said, I haven't been queuing yet, so
yeah. Yeah. So when is the first time you represent Cuba outside of Cuba?
I think I was like 15 or 16. Yeah. 15 or 16, yeah. 16, I think I was, yeah. 16, I think I was, because I remember I went to a competition in France, but to get out of Cuba, you had to have permission from your mom and dad. And I couldn't go to that competition because, like, they couldn't find my parents, you know? And then the trainer falsified a document, and that was the way I could go, yeah.
Mm. And what's it like for you when you first experience another country compared to Cuba?
Yeah. I thought I was in heaven. I think the first time I got out of Cuba, I went to Venezuela. To a competition in Venezuela, yeah. Even Venezuela is like kind of like Cuba.
Yeah.
It was like way better than Cuba, yeah.
Is Venezuela communist too?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really bad right there now.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
But it was a lot better in Cuba, Venezuela.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah, yeah, it is. It's a lot of Cubans there now. It's,
yeah.
It's like anything is better than Cuba. Even Haiti is better than Cuba. Yeah, anything is better than Cuba. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. What was the next step for you then? I know you said you left the orphanage, you moved in with your girlfriend at the time when you were 13, 14. What was the next step for you then? Where did you go from there?
From there, I spent a couple of years in the Cuba national team.
Yeah.
Until I was like, I think I was 19 or 20 when I left Cuba. I was qualified to go to the Olympics in 2008. But it was a guy... In 2005, I was here in Ireland. I fought Kenny Higgy.
Yeah, Kenny Higgy.
Yeah, I beat him up.
Yeah.
I think I beat him like 37 to 10 or something like that.
That was back in the amateur when they used to score a pair punch. Yeah, yeah.
Back in the amateur. Fuck. Yeah.
He won't be happy about this.
Yeah. So it was a guy here from Cork. And then in 2006, he went to Cuba looking for me. And he found me in the Cuba national team. And we started talking. He was saying that, I come here to make a magazine. No? It's a magazine, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what are you talking about? You think I just born yesterday? I was like, what do you want? I was like, no, I just come here to sign you to Tom Pro. I was like, okay, what you give me? And he was like, look, I can give you a house, or I can give you this, or I can give you that I never get for the beginning, you know? But I was like, jeez, okay, let's go. So I signed the contract. And then he brought a woman. Oh, he asked me, what is the best way you can get out of Cuba? And I was like, well, I believe like if you're married, you can get out of Cuba. So then, you know, I'm traveling, just coming back and stuff like that, you know. I was a kid at the time. And I was thinking, you know, just come back, see Cuba and stuff like that. So he brought a woman to Cuba. I married that woman. But I never, I don't know who she is. They didn't let me get out of Cuba either.
Yeah, it's illegal to leave Cuba to box professionally.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't.
Illegal.
Yeah, you can't, because they're communist. So everybody has to like earn the same. So you can't actually. That's why you often see like Cubans representing the US when they're professional or other countries.
So at the time, like I married a woman, I presented all my papers, and they didn't let me out. So they found out that I was trying to leave Cuba to fight professional. and they kicked me out of the national team too. So I told the guy, I was like, look, man, the little thing that I have here, you actually, you know, like, you destroy it. So like,
you took it away. Yeah.
Like, right now, you got to get me out of here. It doesn't matter how. So he was like, how? I was like, look, you can go to Mexico and you can fight like one of these like cartel or something. And they're smuggling people from out of Cuba, you know? So he actually did. He went to Mexico. And the first time he just called me and he was like, you have to be in this place tomorrow at this time. And I'd be like, how are you gonna be there? He was like, no, somebody gonna pick you up and this and that. So I went there. It was a guy, he picked me up. I remember I was walking all night through the woods. And when we get there, the boat didn't come. So we had to come back. And then in the way back, a call come like, oh, the boat is in the way here, so you guys have to come back. So we went back again. And getting into the boat, the police catch us. So I spent like 2 months in prison. So they give me like a papers and stuff like that. So the second time, I get caught too. So they give me like 3 months in prison that time.
Well, it was the second time the same. So you had to go through the woods to get to the boat? Yeah. Same setup?
Yeah, the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I tried that like 4 or 5 times. The last time, I had to swim like 7 or 6 or 7 miles to get to the boat. Because like the place was too shallow,
the
water. So the boat couldn't actually go into the...
Yeah.
Into the reserve, you know? So like, we had to swim into the boat just to get there. When we get to the boat, like, man, I was so tired. So when we get to the boat, there was missing like a lot of people, like women with children and stuff like that. So by the time the boat started actually swimming, the frontier, right? The police started shooting at us. So one of the engines in the boat went, so the boat couldn't go like fast enough. So because it's Cuban water and international water. So like,
yeah,
when you pass the Cuban border, they can't
catch it. Yeah, no, they can't come after
you.
Yeah.
They can't go after you. So like we was lucky enough that we was like there.
Yeah,
and we just passed, but the boat couldn't go fast enough. So we spent like I think it was like 8 hours, but we become three days in the boat with no food, no water, nothing, because like the boat couldn't swim fast enough. And then we get like a tropical storm. So man, that was scary. That was really scary. They changed us to from the speedboat into a big ship, like a fishing ship or something like that.
Yeah.
When the storm passed, they put all back in the speedboat, and we went to Mexico. When I jumped out of the boat in Mexico, my legs didn't actually respond to me. Just to be like, you know, to be sitting like that there for so long,
yeah,
and you know, like water, like sun, water and sun. The legs didn't respond to me, so I started screaming. And the guy come and put the hand in my mouth. It was like, just, you okay, man? You okay? You know, like, be careful. You okay? You know, the legs gonna come back to you in the minute. You know, you being like without walking for so long, so like that's what happened. Mm. And then I started feeling my legs, so I was like, oh shit, yeah. So from there on, like they just take us to like a house, like you know, the cartel take us to a house until like everybody have been paid, you know.
Yeah.
So I was paid the first one. I was paid already, so they bring me straight onto the hotel, and I was there in the hotel. But I heard that there was people that the family didn't pay, and they're still like working for them or something like that. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Some other people have been shot too.
Yeah, the cartel don't fuck about. Mm. Yeah.
See, when you tried to get out and you got caught and you were put in prison,
Yeah.
What was prison like?
Prison is rough.
Rough.
Prison is rough, yeah. But see, I have been in prison before too. I have been in prison before, like for something like fights and stuff like that. So like as a minor, like I have been in that kind of stuff, so like I know how to work. But prison in Cuba is rough. You know, it's really rough. Like it's like 80-100 people in the same place. And yeah, it's
Yeah.
And did the people in prison know who you were?
For boxing, yes.
Yeah.
For boxing, yes. Yeah.
Did that make it easier for you?
Not necessarily, no. Not necessarily. Like you can make it easy if you mind your own business and you know, like you just be doing you, you know?
Mm.
But like, if you stand, like you always gonna have those problems because like people gonna try and see like if you stand up for yourself or not. If you don't, then you're gonna be somebody's lady there.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
Be watching on the ways and probably, you know, being somebody's lady, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. But so in Mexico then, so you make it to Mexico, you get pulled up. What's the next step after there?
I was in Mexico for like, I think like 2 months. Until the guy just like get all the papers ready to come here. So then from Mexico, I just fly to Ireland, yeah.
Right. And see, when you first land in Mexico, do you feel relief?
You're happy? Yeah. You know, when I was in Mexico, like, because I tried to get out of Cuba, like, 4 or 5 times, you know? But when I was in Mexico, I was like, yeah, now I'm free.
Yeah,
let's go.
Yeah.
But, like, Mexico was, like, to get to Mexico, yeah, to get to Mexico was, like, was hard, man.
Mm.
Was hard.
Yeah.
But, like, more hard was to stay in Cuba, 100%.
Yeah, especially because the first time you said you tried to leave, you got caught.
Yeah.
Then you were kicked off the team.
If I would have got caught again, I would have gone to prison for 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah. But you were willing to take the risk?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything to get out of Cuba.
Fuck.
Yeah. I mean, like, I swim 6 or 7 miles to get to the boat.
Yeah.
Why would I not risk my
That's over 10K, like.
Yeah.
To swim. Yeah.
To swim. I can't even swim 200 meters.
Oh, well, you know, you don't live in Cuba. That's why. That's why, for sure.
Yeah. But the ball was getting shot at as well.
Yeah, at the engine. But they wasn't shooting at arrows. They were shooting at the engine. So, like,
they're trying to stop the ball.
Yeah.
Trying to stop the ball. Fucking hell.
So, the helicopter and stuff like that, like, what, I don't know, but, you know, it's Cuba, like. So, like, they can't shoot. They can't.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the guys in the boat were shooting at the helicopter too, so like they couldn't like go too close to the boat either. So
yeah. You're in Mexico.
Mm.
You fly from Mexico to here.
Cork. I fly to Cork, yeah.
Shannon?
And I think so, actually.
Yeah, what about
you? So you went from Cuba to Mexico to Shannon?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
And then the same day, they brought me from Cork to Dublin. I remember it was a show that Katie Dale was fighting that day.
Really?
That was the first time I met her.
What year is this, Mike?
I think it was 2007.
Okay.
Yeah. 2007, 2008, I can't remember. Yeah.
So on the same day you come up to see Katie Taylor fight?
Yeah.
What was this like for you after the whole journey?
I don't even know who she was. I don't know who she was. But like, they brought me there, you know, I met at the time like Brian Peter and all these people, or Bernard Dawn, a lot of people that I was fighting that day. And That was amazing. I mean, like, I have been out of Cuba already, you know?
Yeah.
But being there, I was like, okay. So I remember they brought me to the ring and they introduced me and stuff like that. So I was like, wow, crazy. The same night we went back to Cork. I think that was January, yeah. And I fought, I had my first professional fight like really quick. Like I think I didn't actually need train much for it, like. Yeah.
And that was your first professional fight?
Professional fight, yeah.
Not even a proper training camp?
No. I have, like, the fight, like, really, I think, like, maybe, I'm not sure, but I think it was, like, 23 days after I've been here or something like that.
And why did you take the fight?
At the time, I didn't know.
Right.
You know, like, at the time, I didn't know how things work. Mm. And for me, it was a fight. You know, like, I wasn't, you know, like, been fighting all my life for free. So, like, it wasn't nothing that I, you know, it was new to me. So, they say, like, you fight, you have the debut that day, and I'd be like, okay, let's go. So, it doesn't matter to me who was or not.
Yeah, because it's, I think if you look at it now, you would think it's very risky to take a fight.
Oh, now I can take a fight. You pay me now, I can take a fight tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
matter.
Yeah. Hey. But I mean, for
you, it's still the same. It's, hey, listen, it's still the same thing. You know, it don't matter.
But for your first fight, it's risky.
Yeah. But like, look, when you now I understand how the business works. You know, like when you started like that, you know, they're not gonna put you on fighting people that, you know, like they're gonna build you.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So. I didn't know how it was. Like, I was like, you fighting? I was like, okay, let's go.
You don't care?
No, I don't really, you know. I've been fighting all my life, man.
That's why I said to you. Outside.
In the ring and outside the ring, so.
Yeah.
You know?
I asked you outside, before we started, I said, do you get nervous when you fight? Yeah. Fuck no. I'm fighting all my life.
I lost nervous, like, a long time ago. I don't know what is that.
Yeah. How did you get on then in your professional debut?
Oh, it was good. It was quick. Like, 2 punches, I think, they throw. Yeah, it was really quick.
See.
Actually, 1 punch or two. No, 2.
And that was it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really quick. I think it was quick. 20-something, a second or something like that.
In your debut?
Yeah, watch this in YouTube.
He wants us to pull it up now.
You watch it, it's in YouTube. It's cool. I hit the guy here.
And just knocked him out?
Yeah, that's it, gone.
I bet you thought this is just the easiest thing ever.
I thought that. For, you know, like, then, you know, when the level of opposition starting to increase, I was like, okay. I wasn't even, was like, you know, it was a time in my career where I was like, really, you know, like, taking it serious, you know?
Yeah.
Like, hey, coming up from Cuba, I'm making all this money, I have all these women in top of you, like, I was like, okay, you know? So I kind of like, was kind of, lost a little bit, you know, like, I had never actually was dedicated, man, like, enough to the sport until, like, a couple of years ago, you know? Mm. I was fighting, like, with my knowledge, like, my skill.
Experience,
if you can call it like that. And excuse my language, I was fighting more of the time with my balls, like,
mm.
You know, like, I don't really was training for nothing, you know, I was, like, just fighting.
Yeah.
And because, like, I was even beating people like that, I thought that I didn't need to do more. So.
When did you realize you need to take it more serious?
You know, I went to Russia, and I fight Alexander Povetkin. And he knocked me out.
What fight was this? How many fights in?
Oh, no. I was already my parents. That was in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Povetkin is high.
Yeah, but he never should have knocked me out. No way. He
shouldn't have?
Nah. No way.
You weren't taking it serious in that camp, were you?
No. And, I have, you know, I fought a guy in 2013, right? That guy actually, well, I destroyed his life, but he destroyed mine too.
What you mean by that?
Like, he went to coma. He's paralyzed. He's a bachelor now. So up to this day, I still getting Texas. From people like telling me like, oh, you destroyed somebody's man's life and his kid and this, how you feel now. Look, show you this.
So he went into a coma after the fight, was it?
Yeah.
And now we can't walk or move.
Can't do nothing.
And you say this affected you as well?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. Like, for me, it was like, you know, I went to like, this is like...
This is just a comment from your Instagram.
Yeah.
Just they randomly comment on that.
Yeah, know? Like, I have that every week. I have people like that doing... It's over a decade ago, like...
What Mike showed us there was just somebody sending a nasty message about the tragic incident that happened about the man. But you said this affected you.
Yeah, you know, like, I didn't know that was affecting me that much, you know. After that fight, I didn't get no help. But I didn't know it was affecting me, you know. So I started to drink a lot. Like, I guess I was trying to hide the pain or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. And if you see from there, then they take me out to fight again really quick. I even was like all bruised up, like, because the guy is the biggest hitter I ever fought in my life. He broke my rib and everything. I have a broke rib. I think I fought him in December or November, I can't remember. And they take me out again in February or in January or February, they take me out again. It was like really quick.
I had a broken rib
as
well.
Yeah. And that fight, I had to go to Canada to fight. And that fight, it was a draw.
That was against Carlos Takam.
Yes.
Yeah?
I believe I lost that fight. But like they killed me a draw.
You believe you lost?
Yeah. I believe I lost that fight.
But it's very honest.
Yeah,
honest thing.
Yeah, of course. No, of course, of course. Like, yeah. You know, things are like how they are.
Yeah.
I believe I lost that fight. But they killed me a draw. But then, the fight I believe I won, I lost. And that was the fight with Jennings. I believe I win the fight.
Mm.
And I lost that one. And from there, I went back home here and I just like was doing the same thing, you know, like, but I didn't know, you know, like through training camp, I was drinking like half a bottle of Captain Morgan every day. The night I went, my money at the time know that I have a problem, but I didn't know. He never told me, and the trainer too. So what happened was like between them both, they want to make money. They brought me to Russia, you know. So they brought another guy, he's a Cuban, that he know like they all know that I have a problem, right? But I didn't know. I found out all this like after all that. And they make a bet against me. So after the weighing, the day of the fight, the guy went and buy alcohol. And he killed me, so I just drink it. So I went to fight drunk. So I went to the dressing room. I fell asleep. The training come, when it was my turn, he just bent my hands, put the glove. And to go to the ring, I had to put the hand on top of him, his shoulder. That was the way, because like I was falling.
Because you couldn't walk.
Yeah, I couldn't walk. So if you see the fight, Povetkin throw me a punch, and I block it. And he threw the same punch, and by the time I put my hand up, it was too late. He knocked me out. I can't remember nothing. You know, so I get out of there, and I don't even wait. I just get a taxi to the hotel, and I just keep drinking. After that, I spent like another week there. I stayed there on my own. I come back home. When I come back home, like my wife, you know, she was course, like, you know, she was like, whatever. She was my girlfriend at that. She was my wife. And I just keep drinking. You know, I just keep drinking. And one day I wake up and I said to her, like, I need help. And she started crying and she hugged me and she was like, I thought you never was going to ask for help. So from there, that's it. I just went to get some help and that's it. When I come back from rehab, I started training. I was weighing like 276 pounds.
Fuck. That's big.
So I started training. I couldn't run, you know. I remember we was living in San Francisco. I couldn't run. And she started doing like the diet for me and everything. Just she helped me a lot. She's a great woman. She helped me a lot. And I come one day home and I was like, you know, I'm done with this butcher. I'm not going to do this no more. That's it. I'm done. She was like, what are you talking about? You know, like, great. You have lost so much weight. I was like, I haven't lost nothing. I actually put it on weight. And she was like, look, to lose weight, you got to work. You know, like, things don't going to go easy, like, you know. So she started going out with me, like, running and everything. She in the bike and I'm running, so I start running. And I fell in love with running, man. Now, if I don't run now, I'm going crazy.
I feel the same way, Mike.
If I don't run now, I go crazy, bro. Yeah.
Running is amazing.
Yeah. So since then, like, the weight started, like, dropping down. We was in San Francisco for, like, 10 months. And we was going to stay living there. But, you know, like, I am crazy like that. I was, like, one day I woke up and I was, like, you know, in America, you have to buy everything for the house, right?
Yeah.
When you rent, you have to buy everything for the house. One day, I woke up and I was like, let's go home. I miss my kids. And she was like, what are you talking about? I was like, yeah. It was December. And I was like, let's go home. And she was like, what are you talking about? I was like, yeah, let's go home. We packed the bag, left all the everything there, and we just come home.
Mm. So you don't drink no more?
No. I don't drink since 2016.
Congratulations. Thank it's you. Not easy to stop.
No, it's not easy to stop, but man, you know what? If I wouldn't stop, I would be dead or in prison
yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
You know? So for me, it was easier.
Yeah.
I mean, not easy, you know? It's not easy.
The easy decision. Yeah, yeah. Easy decision. No, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hard to stop, but you know why you need to stop.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, being an addict is, you know, it's not easy. You know, like, people think, like, yeah, you can, why you don't stop drinking, you know? Or why you don't stop using, or why you don't stop this? I mean, like, if it was that easy, you know, it wouldn't be no addict here, you know yeah. what I mean?
Exactly.
So, you, people don't know they have that problem. But, look, for example, I got a call last night, good friend of mine, and he was like, hey, can you get me into the rehabilitation center that you was? I was like, yeah, I can do that straight away. So I called my sponsor and I was like, yo, I have a friend that needs help. And she said, like, send it to me straight away. And that lady is like my mother. You know, I talked to her like, funny enough, look, at the time I was having problems. I still having problems. I don't see my kids since 2017, right? So but at the time, the mother was making like, a lot of problems, like, with, you know, like, money, this and that, like, everything, you know? So she brought me to court for a lot of different reasons that I don't even know. One of those reasons was, like, that she said that my kids was afraid of me. Of course, it's lie, but, you know? So I had to prove that they wasn't afraid of me. So I had to pay this lady that she collect my kids, bring it to me, like, be with whatever I do with my kids all the time. And we become, like, really good friends. She see that it was no problem there, you know? So when I decided to go to rehab, she was the one that she said, I know the perfect place. And my mom worked there. I was like, what? She was like, yeah. So she just brought me there, you know, and that was like crazy. And since then, like, we become like really good friends. Yeah.
The best decision of your life.
100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, listen, if I know how good it feels not to drink, I would never actually drink in my life. You know, even though I have been introduced to drink since small age and since I was 5, like, you know, like, you might just come home from school and you just want to play and you get a bit off because, like, you don't drink a glass of rum or whatever they used to drink at the time, you know? So, for me, it was like, I think I just born an alcoholic, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, so I just want to go back to the Povetkin fight because I've seen him fighting. We all know he's high world level, like really, really good fighter. You think you can beat him if you train properly, full camp?
I think I would knock him off.
Yeah.
I think I would knock him off. And if you see, you know, like, it's an interview there somewhere. What's his name? Deontay Wilder, they said, that's not my Perez. Because, like, Deontay Wilder used to be my sparring partner, you know?
Right.
And after the fight, he said, like, that's not my Perez. There's no way Povetkin would knock him out like that.
He knew there was a problem.
Well, I don't know if he knew it was a problem, but he know that.
But he knew that wasn't you.
Knew it wasn't me. You know, like he said it in the interview. He was like, "Nah, that's not my Perez," because he know what I can do.
Yeah.
Like he used to be my sparring partner, you know. So, but look, that's a lesson learned.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, but I wish I would have fight him again, but like he's retired, you know. And plus, like the fight is gonna be taken out of my record has a loss because something come out there now that he has been in use since something for 10 years or something like that.
Oh really?
So since 2014, every fight that he had won,
it's squashed.
Yeah, they're gonna be rushed. Yeah.
That's great.
Rightfully so.
So you obviously took a break from boxing while you were in rehab.
I take a break from boxing. After the fight, I take a break from boxing. I said for a year.
Did you ever think about giving up completely?
Nah.
No. Boxing is you always knew I'm coming
boxing
back.
Boxing is the only thing I know.
Yeah.
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 So no. I just take a break and since then, because see what happened was like. I was banned from the road here too for drink and driving, you know? So I went to San Francisco to start training with Bejo Hunter.
Mm.
And when I get there, I was like, what are I doing here? So I called my girlfriend. I said, like, yo, come over here. And she was like, oh, you know, like, I'm walking and this and that. I was like, forget about work, just leave that shit there. And she went up. A week later, she went up to me, and we just stayed there for like 10 months. We were thinking in a stay there. We actually get married there.
Mm.
We got married there. And then I was like, no, we come back. So we just come back. And by the time we come back, like, we just start, like, you know, building stuff, like, we just rent a house and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Mike, what has been the best moment of your boxing career?
The best moment of my boxing career?
Tough question.
Yeah. This is a really hard question.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
You can tell me now if you want.
Yeah.
We move on.
I don't know how to answer this one, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer this one, actually.
That's all good.
Yeah.
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
I should have said so far. Yeah. That's my bad.
But look, the guy that went to coma, that even though it's sad, I think that's because like he is a great warrior. You know, like the biggest punch I have ever faced in boxing.
Mm.
You know, it's crazy. It's really crazy. But of course, you know, like, fight for a world title, I say. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm already fight for a world title, but I lost.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready, you know, like I said, when I fight for a world title, that was like me coming back from all these problems. Like, I lost like 70 something pounds. I didn't have like no introduction to the cruiserweight division at all. I just, you know, like, I went to Belfast, and that was my fourth fight at cruiserweight, and I don't even fight. I throw one punch and the guy just went to the ground. That's it. And then I just went to fight for a world title straight away. I wasn't ready for that world title. I wasn't ready. I still have like a lot of like flashback in my head and stuff like that. I was too nice.
Yeah.
You know? Like, to be a boxer, you can be nice. And if you watch the fight, like, the guy keep holding me and trying to strangle me, and I didn't do nothing. I couldn't do nothing. I just keep, like, apologizing to the referee. So it wasn't, like it wasn't that lion that I always have for me. If I would have had that, I would have knocked him off.
Yeah.
But it wasn't me. And then, like, I get that back again after, like, you know, I went back boxing and just had a couple of wins, and, you know, like, I could get that.
I was going to say, have you got it back now?
Oh, yeah. You want me to show you?
No, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, so, because you have a fight coming up, obviously, we were saying.
Oh, yeah, that. I can't wait for that one, man. Listen, anybody that can get, they're going to suffer all the pain that I'll be just getting all this time, man.
Yeah, so, yeah, but not me.
Hey,
it can be.
I can do that too. I can do that too.
Yeah, grand. Thanks.
You were introduced to Roddy Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was told Roddy met you 17 years ago, but you can't remember.
I had no idea. Yeah. But I remember his gym, and, you know, like, Roddy and his family is amazing, man. Like, even the Paggy, the trainer. Yeah. I think it should be with that family a long time ago.
Yeah. And what's it been like training with them in the gym?
Oh, it's amazing, man. You know, it's really good. Even like, you know, we live like really close there. It's great. You know, like, it's like, I think it's like one of the best things that have happened to my career, you know?
Yeah. So you're in a kind of resurgence now in your career.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of people would look and see your age and be like, what the fuck?
But, age? Yeah. What age you think I am?
21.
21?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah, thank you, man. I'm 39 years old.
Really?
Well, age is a number, bro.
Yeah, well, yeah. After I'm saying Terrence can get it, there's not a chance.
Albert's like, you look 18, yeah, bro.
I am 39 years old, but like...
Yeah, but that's a Cuban 39. Can, Cuban 39.
It's an oldest 22.
Yeah.
I can beat up any young guy that you can put in front of me.
Yeah.
And I can beat it up bad.
Yeah. Well, you've been through the battles already, so... Yeah,
I mean, like, look, I think in boxing, it's like... I believe like the only hard fight that I have had is that fight that what happened that to the guy, right? Mm. That's the only hard fight I have. So you see my record, I haven't been worn off. Like, I, you know, like, people don't really, you know, like, I haven't been fighting much, or even if I fought, like, I, you know, like, I stopped the opponent fast or whatever. Like, I
don't, yeah.
And plus, like, I don't know this type of fighter that I like to get hit a lot, so. I like to hit, but I don't like to get hit.
Yeah. Mm. The right way.
Yeah.
Hit and don't get hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, have you got any details about your next fight, Mike?
Right now, no. I'm just waiting for the opponent. It's not confirmed yet. For like June 7th, I'm going to be fighting. Who? I don't know yet.
Where?
In UK.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you find it hard to get opponents?
Very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, very hard.
Why?
I had no idea.
Okay.
Sure.
I had no idea.
Probably.
Mike is the man that nobody wants to fight, and that's true.
Yeah. Me included, Roddy, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how hard, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Fighting Portman Road, Ipswich
football. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's fighting Portman Road and Ipswich. You're a ranked cruiserweight.
Yeah, I think you're number 6.
How the fuck can you not get an opponent?
The ladies don't want to fight me.
That's, it's crazy though. It's, it's.
But this is like
the problem of boxing.
Boxing is like this. Nobody's forced to fight anybody.
It's business now, you know, like people actually, you know, like they're looking for this kind of, you know, like way to make money and stuff like that. Of course, like, look, like everybody knows it's a risk fight me, even though I'm 39, but they be like, look, young boy that they're trying to beat the name, they fight me, they get knocked out, they're going to be like, yeah, bro, how good is 39 years old beat him up, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. So like, it's crazy like that. Boxing is not really like boxing no more.
But yeah. I've heard this about you like months ago that nobody wants to fight you.
I wasn't, you know, like I have no, I don't know if that's true or not, man. I'm just saying like it's really hard to find an opponent for me, like, yeah. And if you find that they really ask for like crazy money, that, you know.
Yeah.
So like that's the way to say no.
Yeah.
You know,
price yourself
it's
out.
It's the easy way out. Yeah.
And we were saying as well that there's too many belts.
I think so. I think boxing has too many belts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so too. I think like WBC have like way too many belts.
Yeah, like there's vacant interim belts. Yeah. Like, why? You shouldn't be, if the belt, if you are an interim champion and you vacate it, that belt should just disappear then. There's no interim belts.
I should think that too. I think it should be only one
yeah, player. One champion. Yeah. So there's one person that everybody is trying to be. That's how it should be.
But then, you know, like, if it's like that, then, you know, the cue to fight for that belt would be, like, you would never fight for that belt.
Yeah, that's also true.
Because, like, it's actually, like, okay, it's like it's a clause in the contract. They say, like, okay, if you beat me, you have to give me a rematch.
That way,
you know, like, you have to wait, I know, 6 months for them to have a rematch. And then it's complicated. It's,
yeah.
Like, boxing is
and
like,
I think there's more money in boxing with the more belts as well, because every fight can be portrayed as...
Yeah, so, like, look, like, and these people make money, too, from that, because you have to pay a sanction. Just to fight for that belt.
Yeah.
You know, like.
So what belt is this, Mike? For people to know.
This one is WBA Intercontinental.
Okay.
Yeah. And the fucking weight of the belt.
And when did you get this?
I believe I got that in 2022.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's 21 or 22, yeah.
Right.
The fucking weight of it. And what was it like the night you got this belt, Mike?
That was, my first back. My first time back boxing after 3 years, and that was amazing. And when I won that, that was amazing feeling. Like, you know, I thought I didn't have it anymore. You know, like, because I was out of the ring for so long, I thought I didn't, you know, like, I didn't have it no more on me. And I remember I fought in Dubai for the belt. The guy that I fought is from Nigeria. And it's like one of the most disrespectful person I ever seen in my life. And in the way he said something to my wife, and I was like, I couldn't put you in the hospital. Trust me. And it's like, I was seeing it. Like, I was so angry that in the fourth round, I think it was, the fourth or the fifth round, I knocked the guy out cold. Actually, I was afraid, because like after I knocked him out, I was afraid that something would happen to him like the other guy. Mm. I was like, if something happened to this guy, that's it, like, my life is over, because I can't go through the same thing again. Like, so he was like dead for like a minute or two, I think, and then he would come and I was like, oh yeah, okay.
Do you worry about that at all?
Right now, no. Right now, no. I mean, like, of course, like, sorry. What do you mean?
About hurting somebody like that?
Look, right now, of course, I always worry about it, you know, like, but I understand the consequences of that, and I know it's not intentional, you know, like, we all sign that contract that said, like, look.
This could happen.
Yeah. Because it can happen to you,
exactly,
too.
Yeah. But at the time, I didn't know the concept of that. So, like, you know, like, texts like this that I show you, I'd be getting, like, even people, it's pictures in the internet there that, you know, like, with those kind of texts, you know, like, writing, pictures of me with those writings. And at the time, I didn't know, you know, like I say, I had never get any help or nothing. So at the time, I didn't know. Now I know that, hey, look, it can happen to me too, you know. It's like, this is my job. I just doing my job.
Mm.
But yeah, you always worry, like, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you always want everybody to go home and see his family and be okay, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some famous cases of that happening, you know. It can happen there.
It happened here not long ago. It's a kid from here died.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. That's
Kilny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can happen, so it's sad, a dangerous sport. So you're training up in Celtic Warrior Gym.
Yeah, I train in Paddy Collins Gym. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I am with the Collins now. I'm a.
It's a Moy doc- Collins.
Yeah. I'm the doctor's son.
Yeah. I can see the resemblance.
Yeah.
They say getting into the Collins family is tough. Getting out.
Tell me about it.
Tell me about it.
So what's worse, Mike, Cuba or the Collins?
They're the same. They compete with each other now. No. This is a great family, man. I am blessed to be around them. You know, like it's a big opportunity for me.
Yeah, he's a big celebrity.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Carlin gives him his
crew
before I
get. Yeah, he's a big celebrity. Yeah,
I know.
I think we should get a camera crew to follow you around, Mike.
Yeah,
see what your life is like with Roddy.
That would be cool. Oh, this man is crazy, man. This man is crazy.
Yeah,
he's crazy. But everybody needs to get behind you and support you now, Mike. You're based in Celtic Warrior Gym now at the moment. Yeah, I heard you changed your name to Ireland, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna change my name. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's all Rudy's, you know?
Yeah, all Rudy's idea.
Yeah, that's all Rudy's.
Yeah, that's his promotional side. Yeah.
Remember the kids?
Oh, actually, yeah. Actually, yeah. It was, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. It actually was a boxing club that went to the gym and training. And I didn't know. Oh. I get to the gym and it has all these kids here, you know? Like, I was like, okay, let me warm up. So I just rub on my hands, put the glove. There was like a lot of kids, like 15 of them, and I did a round in each of them. And then like I went home and just get a text later on from Roddy to say like the kids are delighted, and one of the kids all the kids just called me Iron Mike Perez, and I was like, yeah, okay,
that works. Yeah.
I am based in Dublin. I am not in Cornwall, so like I had to take out the rebel, you know?
Yeah, you're not rebel anymore.
No.
So Mike, you're on Instagram, so people can follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, Mike Perez official. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Perez on Instagram.
Yeah, on Twitter. Facebook, but I can't get into my Facebook, so I don't know.
Yeah, don't mind that. Just Instagram will do for now.
Yeah.
June 7th, Portman Road.
Yeah.
We'll see you there.
Expect another knockout, man. This one's going to be quicker than the last one.
So this is going to be a highlight?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, right. Thanks for coming in and sharing your story with us, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was amazing, Mike. Thanks very much for coming in, Pat. And before we wrap up, a big shout out to our sponsor, FBT. Roy Calvin, tell me, this Hyrox thing that you're up to, what is it?
It's a new fitness and endurance competition. You run for a kilometre, followed by a workout like a sled push. Then you run again, and you do that 8 times over with 8 different exercises, and the fastest time wins.
I thought you didn't even like running anymore. You threw away your shoes the last time I seen you doing a race.
And it's good crack if you have the right team around you. Like the amazing coaches at FPT Gyms, who are officially Hyrox affiliated and deliver brilliant Hyrox classes. I wasn't too sure about committing at first, but they built me up for a lot of hard work and it'll pay off on the day.
So anyone can do it if they join FPT Gym?
Anyone. Unleash your potential at FPT Gym for only €44 per month with no contract and full class access.
They have locations in Swords, Kewlock, Drogheda and the newest opening in Tallaght.
Sign up today at fptjames.ie.
All right, wrap this one up. Take us out, Lauren.
Bill.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the ground. Fill your body up in. Walk it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.